Hello, Capricorn, and welcome to Good as Gold, your 2014 reading on the topic of art and self-esteem and business and how to get that all going together. I want to start with a reading of two houses. I've been doing a lot of two house at a time interpretations in this segment. It's one of the fun ways to experiment with astrology. It's kind of like playing intervals in music, where, you know, when you play a third, minor third, you get one sound. You play a major third, you get another sound. And in astrology, when you play the first and second houses together, you get one sound. And then when you play the first and the eighth houses together, you get a different sound. And so I'm going to start today with the first and the eighth. Usually I've been starting with the first and the second, because the second involves self-esteem and self-value, and then available resources, what you've got that you can use to live your life. And in the case of Capricorn, I'm going to look at the eighth, because the eighth house, eighth solar house, or eighth house by whole sign houses, if you're Cap rising, is Leo. And so that is where the action is, or a bunch of the action is right now. And I think it makes a really interesting pattern to have Leo on the eighth house. And it helps explain Capricorn in a lot of ways. I'll get into that as this develops. So let's start with Capricorn itself, your sign, or your rising sign, or perhaps your moon sign. And consider that Pluto is moving through your sign. Long trip, started in 2008, finally wraps up in 2024. So that ends up coming out to about, 14 years and a little change on either side, I guess, if my quick in the head math is correct. And Pluto is about a fundamental reconstruction of who you are when it's transiting the first house, which for you it is. This probably began sometime in 08, 09, and there may have been a distinctive shift in your life at that point. You may have noticed that you were consciously rearranging things. And then as Pluto works its way through the first house and kind of penetrates the sign Capricorn ever more deeply, and then begins to make aspects both to other planets in your chart and other planets in the sky right now, the effect is spread out and deepened and kind of injected into other areas. And so that Pluto effect of the evolutionary imperative, you might call it, the unstoppable force for growth, is something that is concentrated in your first house and then is also distributed in various places around the zodiac. Now, Pluto going through one's first house presents a very powerful sense of self-focus. And this is controversial. It is controversial mainly, I think, because one of the main products of capitalist society, which is advertising society, therefore reflected in the, shall we say, art form of mainly national advertising, the big brands, the ones that are using lifestyle and personal image and who have psychologists involved in the ad-making process to be able to basically play on the weaknesses of others, both promulgates narcissism and then exploits it. So the classical ad, the one that usually I have a sense of humor about this thing, this is the one I didn't have any sense of humor about at all. The Army of One. The U.S. Army used to have an ad for an Army of One, and it extolled the recruit, the new recruit, presumably just barely out of high school, as being this singular hero. And showed all kinds of photography of the dude on the mountaintop and, maybe jumping out of the helicopter or running along the ground with a rifle, and basically pitched to people that potential recruits that the Army was going to be you. Now, the reason I found that offensive is because there is nothing in this world that requires cooperation, camaraderie, intuitive understanding of one another, having one another's back at all times, than being in combat. And that is just one kind of hellacious example of the ways in which narcissism is both perpetuated and exploited. And because of that, many other forms of self-awareness, self-focus, self-respect, self-esteem become conflated with narcissism and are confused with it, and also don't get recognized for the distinctiveness that they have, for the value that, for example, self-respect has as opposed to narcissism, or that self-love has as opposed to narcissism. And as long as that confusion is there, it can be answered by products like the Army of One that kind of fill the void that this has created. And so straight away, I would say that if you're noticing this is a time when you have to be very self-focused, when you must be the main participant in your own life, where there is an independence and autonomy that you are reaching for that is not typical of who you are and that seems to have evolved over a phase of time and, you know, become part of you, I would say that you're right within punting range of what your astrology is saying. Now, what is interesting is that the asteroid Narcissus, and I haven't plotted how slowly this thing moves, but I'm seeing it in a lot of charts, is close to conjunct Pluto. It's hanging around right in right around mid Capricorn, and it is right there in effect acting as one body with Pluto, though if you look at it the right way, you can see it as its own thing. Now, here, I just looked up this point. I can't believe I've never looked this point up. I've seen it a lot of times. It's actually a centaur, which means it's an orbit crosser. The Wikipedia page is verging on useless, telling me much about it. Therefore, I must take the question to somebody named Kirsty Melto in, God, I forgot what country she's in, far up in the north. And she will know this, what orbits it crosses. It's got an 18-year orbit of its own. It was discovered in 2000. And so it is a slow-moving object. It's certainly compared to an asteroid, which typically has a 4 to 5 year orbit. Some have one, some have longer, but they're usually 4 to 5 years. Something with an 18-year orbit is slower than Pluto. It's going to hang out in every sign for a year and a half, not counting retrogrades. And not counting the weird orbit of centaurs. So sometimes they move quickly through a sign, and sometimes they move slowly through a sign. Now I'm going to study up on Narcissus, particularly given that it's conjunct Pluto. And so this enhances the controversy of self-focus. And it enhances the feeling of self-focus. And to my mind as an astrologer, it asks more questions than it provides answers, which is a very good use for astrology. I think astrology is much better at asking questions than it is at providing answers. We bring our own answers to the work with the help of astrology. And the reason I bring all of this up and make such a point of all this self-focused stuff is that's art. Art requires someone to be extremely self-absorbed part of the time. Most of the time, perhaps. Not all the time, but certainly when doing the work. I mean, think of how much energy it takes to paint or learn how to paint. How much energy it takes to learn how to play guitar. It may seem like everybody jumps up on the stage and plays in a band, but I assure you that every one of the professional musicians you've ever seen play has spent thousands and thousands of hours on their own, in solitude, locked in a room, locked in an attic, hiding in the basement, away from other humans, learning how to do that. And it requires a profound introspection. And right around Narcissus, Pluto is hanging a point called Hera. And so there's even a kind of a hint here about marrying oneself, about how you to fully tap your creativity, you need a deep relationship with yourself that could seem to others, maybe people who make ads for the Army of One, to be narcissistic. But I would counter that hypothetical argument by saying, no, it's necessary to be self-focused. It is certainly necessary to love yourself or to be in the process of working out a relationship with yourself. But that's not necessarily narcissism. I will tell you what I think narcissism is. It is the state of mind or of consciousness, same idea, where no one exists except as an extension of yourself. Now, it is possible to look at what spiritual paths call ego consciousness and say, well, yeah, that's how it is. The ego is the center of the universe, and everything else besides it is an actor or a projection on its little drama stage. And this is a theme that I think is a good one for all manner of art, poetry, reflectiveness, music, and all that. And I would not be so quick to make a definitive answer, but I will say that, you know, it's nice if someone cares about how you're doing, and it's nice if you care about how someone is doing. And even if you're not fully sincere about that, it does make a difference to stop and ask and cultivate sincerity in the process of listening. Pay attention to the person. Be aware what they're going through. Not a requirement. It is not. In polite society, yeah, you know, you say, how are you? I'm fine and all that. But really, your life right now especially has to be about you, and everything else will follow from there. Now, this has interesting twists. Let's jump over to the eighth house. The eighth house in your chart is Leo. And Leo is about self-consciousness being born. So Leo is the sign that is associated with nascent and then the rapid evolution of individual consciousness. You might think it was Aries, but Aries is more exists more on a cosmic level, and it gets things started in a universal sense. Leo is where, according to pretty good astrological theory, we look for nascent, developing self-awareness, selfness. I am a self. I exist. There are other selves. They exist. We are in relationship. Ah, that's the eighth house. That's where Leo is. So your whole eighth house says, I am a self. There are other selves. We are in relationship. I bring what I bring to the equation. And then we try to have some kind of an exchange. But if you think of the thematic content of having, for example, this energy of self-awareness, really, like, imagine it's congealing like a crystal, the first moments that a crystal forms in nature, and then once it starts, it's going to keep going, happening in a place where there really is the expectation of an exchange. It's where there's like inheritances and dowries and contracts and investments made and joint property. There's always something mutual going on in the eighth house, but you bring yourself fully into that experience. This would make you a very appealing partner. You need to find people who understand that they bring everything that they have into every meeting, so that at least there's a mutual meeting. And it may be difficult for you to feel grounded in yourself and grounded in your purpose in life without having that kind of an exchange. Now, the beauty of your charts, among a whole bunch of other things, is twofold. One is that Pluto is moving through your first house. Pluto is describing your process not only of self-focus, but also a profound reconstruction of who you are. Pluto acts like kind of a penetrating object or demolition team or something like that, that grinds through all the jetsam and flotsam of history in the past and ancestors and all this stuff, and is leaving you increasingly free to choose who you want to be, who you want to express yourself as being. And at the same time, and by the way, this is no small change. This is no typical transit. The last thing that you experienced anything like this was Chiron passing through the territory, beginning in late 2001 till I would say early 2005. So approximately 4-year stretch, Chiron came through right after 9/11. For the several years following 9/11, Chiron was in Capricorn. That was, in my opinion, the last, most recent object with this kind of consciousness-generating power, and might have been an extremely formative time in your life. So now you've got Pluto doing this, plus a little bit of Narcissus, and we'll mix in Hera, the Queen of Heaven, for a good measure. And in the eighth, there is a huge abundance, indicated primarily by Jupiter, but at the time of this reading, also the Sun. And we are at exactly now, well, coming up on approximately 23 hours and change away from the Aquarius full moon as I'm recording. And so the Sun is there in brilliant form, as is Magdalena, an asteroid that I'm still in the process of delineating. But let's say that Magdalena describes the state of mind of really having a clue, soon to be joined by Venus. Venus is going to make a conjunction to Jupiter. It almost looks like gaining some kind of massive inheritance or winning the lottery or getting some huge deal. Like, you wrote a short story and then Paramount Pictures wants to pick it up and they give you $500,000 for a short story, that kind of thing. You did your part, but there's something coming to you. And the beauty of your charts is that you really understand that you need to be committed to who you are as an essential part of this equation. Now, the inheritance can exist on a number of different levels. I mean, with Venus and Jupiter involved and the Sun, it certainly looks like there's money in the picture somewhere. It might be a partner's money. It might be someone considering making an investment in you. It might very well be your money. But what Pluto does is it draws this back into saying, yeah, but that's not really that important. The thing that really matters is my self-actualization. I must recognize myself as a whole person, or none of this is worth anything, not the other way around. Not I must have this exchange, or I won't be a whole person, but rather, if I'm not a whole person, even the most amazing exchange, even the biggest pot of gold could be given to me, don't matter. But now you have the possibility for balance. Pluto is extremely compelling. And that eighth house you've got right now is also extremely compelling. Heck, who wouldn't want to have Venus conjunct Jupiter in their eighth house. I mean, that's an absolutely awesome transit. I mean, almost any astrologer would look at that and say, yeah, man, something good is coming here. So be open. Be open. And openness matters. Being energetically open, feeling your abundance that you have, feeling your wealth, strolling around like you have no worries about money, all of that actually contributes to openness. We do live in a culture where we basically train ourselves to think in very limited terms about what's possible, about what we can have, and you have an amazing opportunity to open yourself up to the possibilities, to allowing the inflow of wealth in a number of forms. Jupiter presents that wealth in addition to, you know, potentially being material, mostly thanks to Leo, as an inheritance of knowledge and wisdom. So I would say that if there was ever a great time to learn from others in your life, now is the time to learn from others. Apprentice yourself to a master at what you want to learn. It is likely that if someone really does have that kind of knowledge, someone really is a master, they're going to recognize you. They're going to understand that you're sincere and that you're there, and then just make sure you bring your all into that. I'm noticing that for as much as we are an information-based society, that actual learning and mastery are concepts that are fading away and being replaced by this whole thing about, like, information, which is another word for bullshit, and then also the belief that no one really has to actually earn anything. It's just that you know, somehow someone is a special person, and then, you know, they're bestowed a record contract, and there's even with the people who, you know, you might make fun of the most, live, you know, teen stars and so forth, can live grueling lives of rehearsal there and travel and having to perform up to a certain standard, and that's not easy. They too must bring themselves to the equation, and it is well worth not begrudging them any of the money that they earn, because we don't really know what cross they have to bear. You're in a position to take control of your growth and at the same time be open to an inflow of abundance. And it's almost like I could stop the reading right there and say, if you can do that, if you can focus on who you're becoming, which is naturally going to express itself in a creative way, it's going to be some inspiration or some drive or some restlessness that's going to focus you, it's going to come out in a creative form in some way. Okay, so these two houses are always in this relationship to one another. Leo, especially speaking about your solar chart, or if you're Capricorn rising, using whole sign houses, the oldest house system, these houses are always in relationship to one another. However, now they both have powerful planets in them. And those powerful planets are in a relationship that is creating a kind of a conductivity. And the conductivity requires this sense of constant adjustment. It's almost like you're on a curve and you're going pretty fast. And you know that if you know any physics, it doesn't take much to wipe out. It does not actually take very much to flip a car over if all the vectors are right. So your job as the driver of the car is to make sure that you don't exceed your speed, you stay in your lane, you avoid any obstacles, and that you don't flip the car over. Because there's a lot of momentum moving right now, and it would be easy to do. There's momentum moving other places. We're going to get to them and move along here. Let's talk about the second house for you. This tells a similar story. The second house is the ancient house of available resources, and one's ability to sustain oneself. And here again, we get a very interesting picture. Capricorn's a really interesting sign. They're all interesting once you pry them open, and some of them are just, you would think, this is a fascinating combination of subjects. How is it possible to explain human nature using, I'm using a blank astrology wheel with stuff that I penciled in sitting on my friend Ray's honey truck at the farmer's market this morning. Second house, Aquarius. Your resources are community resources. You have the ability to tap into the collective. You have the ATM card for the big bank. You're the person who can go up to the Fed window, which is probably a website, and transfer money. There is a reason that Capricorn is associated with success in business. And what I was thinking sitting up on the honey truck at the farmer's market this morning is this is really not about success in business as a birthright, but rather about success in business as a necessity for maximizing your chart. And by success, I mean skills in business. I mean awareness of how society works. I mean an understanding of things like taxes and accounting. I mean good relationships with people like tax preparers and with accountants. And there is indeed, in addition to that, ability to tap collective resources, which is a fantastic skill, to be able to draw on the many to do something. There's also a very high level of propriety that you feel that you must attain. And if you ever meet a Capricorn who plays fast and loose, you know the reason that they're playing fast and loose is because it's too burdensome to follow the rules of society the way those rules should be followed. And I believe it's important to follow some of the rules of society. You cannot break all of the rules, and there's some rules that's very unwise to break. There's some things you just absolutely have to do by the book in order to succeed in any long-term way. And then, you know, when you're making a painting, you can blend impressionism and abstract expressionism just because it's worth an experiment, and you know, it might come out nice and nobody but you is going to really care initially anyway. And if you don't like it, you can always just, you know, paint over it. But you take this to a bit of an extreme. There is a certain purism that comes through Capricorn, and this is owing to, let's jump around the wheel here, to the ninth house. It is another earth house in your chart. First house is Capricorn, so that's an earth sign. Fifth house is Taurus. That's an earth sign. We're going to come back to Taurus in a second. And then the ninth house is another earth sign. There's only three. And Virgo has a propriety thing going on. It has an overthinking thing going on. Virgo, would benefit from being soaked in water. In some ways, it is being soaked in water. But the thing about Virgo that is so unusual right now is that a little non-existent thing called Trans-Pluto is in the process of entering Virgo, and it's there right now. Now, Trans-Pluto takes about 75 years to move through a sign. It doesn't exist as an actual planet that can be seen by a telescope. It's what's called a hypothetical point. It is my favorite of the hypothetical points. There's nine of these things altogether. And there's one group of eight, which is really two groups of four, and then a ninth kind of random one thrown in. That ninth random one is Trans-Pluto. And from what I gather from Trans-Pluto, it has a lot of similarities to the way people describe shadow Virgo, self-critical, narrow, petty shadow Virgo, right? Not the Virgo of service, the Virgo of the goddess, the Virgo of genius, a lot of other attributes that Virgo has. So this is the dark side of Virgo, the struggle that Virgo has to approve of itself. And I would say what this adds up to is, since we draw a lot of inspiration from the ninth house, you have Virgo there. That's a little difficult. And trans-Pluto makes it a little more difficult. I would remind you, God is not mad at you. Not only that, it is probably not possible to use calculus to prove the existence of God. I don't know enough calculus to know that you can't prove the existence of God with calculus, but I'm going to take a guess and say, well, even if you could, it would kind of be irrelevant. And that is to say, don't look to science to prove something that really is a matter of faith. Let a matter of faith be a matter of faith. Now, your mind is naturally going to go in the direction of science in that respect. So let it be science. You know, you have a powerful affinity for wanting to understand the way the world works in an elemental way. And you don't have to do that by trying to prove the existence of God. You can do it just as well by immersing your mind in the elegance and the beauty of mathematics, or getting yourself a copy of the periodic table of the elements and just looking at this amazing discovery or invention or whatever, however you want to classify the periodic table of the elements. It's a beautiful thing, and observe the elegance of the living universe. That points right to God. And there may be some one specific metaphysical question that you have that you can apply that to. The one of the most positive things about trans-Pluto is specificity. So I would say that if you're asking questions, ask specific questions rather than general questions. Study point by point and understand things in pieces, and then eventually you'll start to see the connections. The connections will start to emerge and point to some larger, wider, and deeper truth that will, you know, nourish you in some way, as is the, you know, the gift of Virgo. All right, let's talk about a few of the houses. I've got a few houses to cover here that are oriented on creative work product. Let's see if we can get a confluence of themes going with these houses. One of the themes of Capricorn that I think is very meaningful, and though I probably say this a lot, I try to save it for when I really mean it, is that, first of all, the background is you have Pisces on the third house. The third house is a house of cognitive activity, thinking, writing, applied technology, you know, actually sending a letter, making a phone call. These are all things associated with the third house. Contact, communication. You have Pisces there. You might think that it just makes as much sense to telepath someone a message than it does to, you know, write it on a postcard and send it, or send it in an email. Most humans don't have their third eye all that open. In fact, most humans actively resist anything that involves any kind of psi phenomenon where it exceeds the normal realm of the senses as were defined by Aristotle. Now, I wondered who... One day I got angry and said, why are there only five senses? Obviously, there's so many more senses. Who the heck said there are five senses? Well, I guess it turns out Aristotle was the first person who kind of wrote that as a law, that there are five senses. This is one of a long list of reasons I'm not a fan of Aristotle. But you have Pisces on the third house. You think there's a lot more than five senses. In fact, there are a lot more than five senses. But you have a lot of activity going on in Pisces right now. Neptune is there. Chiron is there. Borsisi is there. This is calling for some discipline. This is calling for bringing some of that Virgoan specificity into the third house and really doing your best to express in any way that you can that which you think is unexpressible. Chiron is the main actor as far as that expressing the unexpressible is concerned. Neptune in Pisces is just as happy to not express the unacceptable, expressible, just sort of hang out with it, feel how beautiful it is. Look at that lovely sunset. Why do you have to describe that sunset? Ah, Chiron would say you're describing it to build up your gift of description. You're doing it to learn how to focus your mind. Focusing will get you far right now. A little focus will go a very long way, and you'll like it, and that will encourage you to want to focus even more, to want to build up your focusing muscles. So this is an important part of output, especially given that one of the deepest wells of creativity in the entire zodiac is Pisces. It is where the inspiration comes pouring in, and for you it's coming pouring in through the third house, and that's saying express this with pencil and paper, type this out, print it out, take notes, and basically make the ineffable real in some way. A lot of study, by the way, is possible on your beliefs. I think if you write about your beliefs, you're going to learn a lot about how the belief-making process works, and then consequently how beliefs make apparent reality. And there's also, with this one point that I'm referring to called Borsisi, a lot in there about, is this lie true, or is this truth a lie? What's more harmful, a dangerous lie or a helpful truth, or a helpful lie and a dangerous truth? Kind of paradoxical in one way. There's an article in my archives called With Love from Borsisi, quote unquote. If you just type in With Love from Borsisi with quotes around it, it should come right up. And that analyzes this point, Borsisi, which is related to Kurt Vonnegut's book, Cat's Cradle, which is a whole commentary on the lies of religion versus the truths of science. And given that your mind has this tendency to grapple with those issues, specifically those issues, about why things are true and how we know what we know, that's to say epistemology, you might find this article and the corresponding book to be very interesting. Okay. Speaking of the non-physical being made physical, which is what the equivalent transition of like inspiration to writing, for example, your fifth house, the most creative of the houses, the actual art studio, the place where risks are taken, is Taurus. Now, this has some interesting connotations to it, and it describes the work that you do and how that work is going to feel good, and that is, it's going to feel good by being physical. There needs to be some kind of a physical manifestation, not, for example, merely a digital manifestation. Not merely, for example, writing that is transmitted, but rather in some way writing that is presented in a physical form, probably illustrated, referencing back to Pisces. But the other thing about Taurus is, all the earth signs have this, is that it can be obsessed with making sure things are done absolutely right. And the contradiction between things being done absolutely right and the fifth house is that the fifth house is an experimental zone. It is the mad scientist laboratory. It is the art studio where you walk in, where you know that any creation might come out of that place. And there's not a lot of room for perfectionism in there. I think any artist will tell you that eventually they learn that there is such a thing as good enough. That is to say, it does the work that they wanted to do, some particular piece, but there really is no such thing as perfect, and it's never possible to live up to someone else's standards, which are often imaginary, but rather, you must have your own standard and have your own concept of adequacy and effectiveness, and do your best to bring that into some physical form, but preferably without worrying about the standard without worrying about the rules, because Taurus can get very concerned with this concept of right and wrong. And while I'm not arguing for amorality here, and I would make some argument for moral relativism, the great bugaboo of the Christian right wing, they hate this concept of moral relativism, that some actions are right in some circumstances and some actions are right in other circumstances. Nothing is ever right all the time. It's all relative. Therefore, there is no absolute right and wrong, whereas the anti-moral relativism camp would say there is absolute right, there is absolute wrong, you must follow absolute right, blah, 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 or you go to hell, blah, blah, blah. Beware of that. Beware of purism in any form, and remember that creativity in any form is experimental by nature. Even especially the people who are the most masterful are masters of experimentation. Think of David Byrne, one of the great musicians, composers of our lifetime, converting this huge, empty building in the Staten Island ferry complex of buildings. I mean, a building the size of Madison Square Garden, practically. And he outfitted the whole thing with remote-controlled hammers that would whack beams and cables and walls and could play the building like a musical instrument. And this is when he's, like, 55 years old, well into his career, done as much as anyone really would ever want to do. And then he's like, yeah, let's rig up the entire ferry terminal with hammers, remote-controlled hammers, and play music on it. So this is an example of, by the way, a Taurus who likes to do things right, but also leaves a lot of room for experimentation. His life is an experiment in many ways. Another one of my favorite musicians, Brian Eno, artist musicians, Byrne is also both. Eno, a Taurus, also is a master of experimentation whose work seems to get more loose and more precise at the same time, always in this kind of fusion of elegance and seeming perfection and then wide open experimentation. And I think that is possible with Taurus, but you have to close the book of etiquette and live the ethos of the ongoing perpetual experiment. One last thing. It would help you to not worry about what people think about you, what they think about your work, what opinion they have of even your most seemingly out there ideas, especially if those ideas verge in any way into sexuality. Scorpio, don't worry about what people think. Or remember that I said you don't have to worry about what people think. Right now you have Saturn in Scorpio in the 11th house, and that has a way of, and Mars, and they're going to make a conjunction at the end of August. This is some kind of tension. This is something potentially explosive there. And I would say to defuse that, worry less about what people think and worry more, or don't worry at all, but focus on what you need to express. What Saturn in the 11th can do is it can very nicely help you carve out your niche, your unique space, and to make your unique space for your increasingly unique self that you are discovering is an actual entity distinct from all other entities, changing, growing, becoming, aligning yourself with reality in a way that is completely different than you've ever done before and completely different than every other human on the planet. Don't worry what all those humans think. Most of them don't have the capability right now to be even able to judge or assess what you're doing. Your role as the artist is to teach them, to bring them along. There you go. That's what I have to say to you, my Capricorn friend. Check in with your sign rising if it is not Capricorn. You can find out your rising sign on astro.com. They make very nice looking charts. You can get a free account. I cannot vouch for their other pay products, but I can tell you that AstroDienst has been very good to the astrological community. They're the people who provide this service. If you are looking for your minor planets and you are wondering how that website, serenu.com, S-E-R-E-N-N-U.com, is able to do these calculations, it's drawing off of this thing called SWEF, the Swiss Ephemeris. That's also produced by AstroDienst, astro.com. So check out your rising sign over at astro.com. Check out that sign. If you're looking for specific information about your career and where you're heading, if you feel like you want to head for the top, check out the Libra reading. If you are looking for specific information about this public image thing I'm talking about, check out the Scorpio reading. And to investigate your creative talent, that ongoing experiment of creative reality, check out the Taurus reading. All right. Thank you for listening. A pleasure working with you. Happy to share with you in this way. Do send your feedback, dreams@planetwaves.net. Signing off with love. And bye for now.